All right, we are live at Target Field, hour two of Drive Time with DeRussia on this Thursday, sort of overcast afternoon. Had a couple of pleasant days with no smoke in the air. It's good to take a bike ride, or I had dinner on the patio 2 days in a row. It's been nice. Target Field tonight, we'll see what the fan reaction is the first time fans get back into Target Field. Not since the trade deadline. I was here for a Friday night fireworks game, great game after the trade deadline, where fans had some young players to be excited about. Now this will be the first time fans are back after news that the Poleads are retaining majority ownership of the Minnesota Twins. Paul Molitor is with us. Paul, it's so good to see you. Hall of Famer, former manager, current broadcaster. What a 10 or 15 day stretch it's been for this team.
It really has, and I have to say, first of all, I'm not surprised that I was out of town for the couple of nice days that we had.
That's how this goes.
That's
right.
That's how it goes. It's been kind of a strange summer that way.
You like to ride? Do
I'm
you
a
still?
Biker.
You're
yeah.
a biker, yeah.
Yeah. We just have so many good trails to try to take advantage of, and I try to mix it up and get out there. You know, can't run anymore, so you got to do something
better, right? Yeah. Exactly.
But you know, back to what you said, Jason, about just this whole thing with the club, and I was surprised at the amount of players that were moved. Obviously, I knew that there would be some action. I didn't think that the hopes for, even if we had made the playoffs, potentially the chance at a run weren't very high. So the guys that were going to be potential free agents made perfect sense to me, but some of the other guys were a little bit of a shocker.
I think Varlin surprised everybody.
Yeah, I think so. And I think some people thought, hey, maybe we'll trade either Jax or Duran, but probably not both. Those type of things. But as far as what the Poleads eventually decided to do with the announcement yesterday, I didn't see that coming. I hadn't heard anything, you know, behind the scenes, or I wasn't privy to any of those type of discussions. But of all the possible outcomes, that was probably the one I was least expecting.
Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, I can understand on the one hand, many of us have put a house up for sale, and you get some offers, and you think they're not that great, and then maybe you emotionally are like, you know, I'm not quite ready to let go of this. We saw Glenn Taylor try to pull back when he was, like, I get the emotion, and I know people, fans have such emotions towards the Poleads, but man, if you're Joe and you grew up as a kid hanging out at the Metrodome in the Twins dugouts.
Right.
Like, I get the emotional pull that you don't want to let go of it.
Well, I think that they had every intent to sell the team, given the right parameters surrounding a deal. And they eventually came to the conclusion that maintaining, you know, the primary ownership with a couple of new limited partners coming in, we'll see how that plays out. I think...
What's your biggest question about that, as far as how that plays out?
Well, I'm not really sure of the terms and conditions of how much money's coming to the table through these limited partners. Is it going to address, hopefully, a better product on the field? Or is it going to go to try to working down the debt that the club is supposedly carrying? There's some questions around that. I'm not overly curious about who the two parties are. You know,
doesn't matter.
It was a little awkward that we got the announcement and didn't find out right away. But we'll see. I just think the fans' perspective is, most of them will tell you, they know this is a business. That's bottom line. But they would like to see some type of more commitment to people that are financially capable of doing some things that might improve the product on a year-to-year basis.
Is there a number? Is there a payroll number that you think would make people feel better?
Well, it's kind of, we're going to be starting from a rather low number at the start of next year.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, if you go back
we're
to
already down to what, 130?
Well, I think we're probably below that after the trades that we made. But, you know, after the playoff series went against the Blue Jays, that's when I think a lot of the fans that were trying to hang in there and do what they can as far as the Polad and their strategies kind of lost a little bit of that passion when they decided to go less rather than more after that exciting time a couple of Octobers ago.
I think it's really that simple. Like you can understand the business side of why they went less. The TV was uncertain. Big money. We still were post-COVID. Let's be honest about that. I feel like people don't talk about that enough.
Not very much.
But part of why attendance here has been down and why the team is down so much in revenue is that people weren't coming back to downtown Minneapolis. Now, today, I think people are more comfortable But let's be real, like, it's sure. It's been a more challenging situation post-George Floyd, post-riots.
Post-COVID.
Post-COVID, right. All of that, then other major league series.
No, I think that added to it. I mean, there was a time, especially after the unfortunate things that took place after, you know, George Floyd was murdered, was that visiting clubs weren't even staying downtown. They were staying out, like...
Like by Mall of America.
By the Galleria. There's that nice little...
the West End, yeah.
Yeah, people just didn't want to risk being down here. I do think there's a little bit more comfort... comfortability and people coming down here. But there's a lot of factors, as you mentioned, that have kind of slowed those big numbers that you would like to see at Target Field.
Paul Molitor is our guest. Are there days where you're looking at all of this going on and where you think I miss managing the team?
I missed it a little bit the first couple of years. Yeah. I think it's kind of waned. It's, you know, this is Rocco's, what, seventh year, eighth year? I mean, it's been incredible how the time has gone by. And I'm not trying to gain points or anything, but the whole poll ad thing, I have to say, on my end, they've treated me great. You know, everyone has their opinions, and fans are certainly entitled, but from Carl and then Jim's ownership and now Joe, I've been able to be a coach, a manager, a player, and a broadcaster, and so a lot of good things have come my way because of what they've done.
It is unusual, I think, and I don't know if it's just the Twins or if it's a baseball thing. But the fact that you see guys who got fired.
I think it's unique to the Twins in some ways. There might be a couple other places where guys that have been let go, if you will. TK was more on his terms.
Yeah.
Gardy, I think it was a collaboration that he just thought it was time for a new face. And then when Derek and Thad, after my 4 years here, I totally understood when they came in that my years were probably numbered and they were going to want their own guy.
Yeah.
But the relationships are strong enough where they find a role, and I give Dave St. Peter a lot of credit in that as well, too.
No doubt. Paul Molitor is our guest. All right, when you look at the team that's out there right now, you know, it's difficult to sell to fans like, hey, come and see how these kids are. But you still have Buxton. You still have, well, Royce Lewis, I think, is a question mark.
Sure.
You still have some pieces. Pitching is a question, but you got Joe Ryan.
Right.
We saw Pablo Lopez out here throwing pregame, so hopefully he's getting a little closer.
Sure.
Where are we at with this group?
It's a young, unproven group for the most part. And, yes, the pieces that you do have, I'm glad Joe Ryan's still here. Obviously getting Pablo back. Our offensive production definitely relies heavily on Byron and his health, and he's stepped up this year.
What a season for him.
It's been fantastic. And I think Royce, not untypical to a lot of players, had immediate success, raised the bar on expectations, had the injuries to overcome, and then all of a sudden, probably for the first time in his life, he struggled.
Yeah.
And the confidence that you lose, you know, you look at Edward Julian and what he did a couple of years ago, and he hasn't returned to form, and some of the other guys... I think the jury's still out on which of those guys, you know, if you say, hey, which position players are going to be in the lineup in 2 or 3 years from now, there's not a lot of guarantees.
Yeah.
So I think Keyshaw's been great, and I like his chances. But he found out even after that hot return after disabled list, he had a rough series in New York too. So you're kind of dealing with that. I'm interested to see where it's going to go. I like the athleticism the team has added. And today's game, you look at teams like the Brewers and the Tampas and Cincinnati's, they're finding a way to win by maybe not having the biggest names, but by doing things a little bit old school.
Can you tell when you see a younger player, can you tell, I think this guy is going to make it?
I look at skill level somewhat, but I also look when I have a chance to be around them, the makeup component. You know, Terry Ryan was huge on that. Just how you deal with failure, you hear that all the time in sports. Failure is very high in baseball.
Yeah.
And these guys that...
Well, the Julian example is a great one, and we're watching Royce. We hope that he's able to fight through it.
Yeah, I think he will. But it's.
But you don't know?
No, you're never sure. Go back to guys like Torrey Hunter and Michael Kadire back in for our fans who have been around.
Yeah.
They had to go back to the minor leagues, in some cases more than once, before they finally figured out how to be consistent up here and not have so many ups and downs and have it bury you along the way.
Is it more the learning, the resilience, or is it like honing in skills that makes the difference?
Because
these guys have been the best player in their universe forever. And this is, like you said, maybe the first failure.
Well, the skill training, the accessibility to tools that we never had, whether it's video or the pitching machines and all these things, is better than it's ever been. But if you ask me, mental component or the physical component, the guys that struggle, it's usually more between the ears than it is in the batter's box.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting because you look at the skills, you look at how long it takes to get up to the big sure. league club, but then...
Well, look at you, you know, all your ups and downs, and look how confident you look.
I'm still figuring it out. I just don't care. You're like, you know, you're going to fail. You're going to fail sometimes.
That's some of that for sure.
But that is the hard thing, especially when you're used to success, when you have something that doesn't quite work out.
Yeah.
How do you dig yourself out of it?
Well,
it's tough.
Kind of connected. You know who Harvey McKay is, kind of a famous author here from the Twin Cities, a big, tremendous businessman. He wrote a book like, if you've never been fired, I'm not sure the exact title, but if you've never been fired, you're probably never going to be the person that you were meant to be. You got to go through some type of adverse conditions before we finally figure some things out.
Well, we talk about that with... Can you hang on for one more segment? Do you have a minute?
I actually have to
go. Oh, you got to go.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. It's quite all right. Well, Paul Molitor is in a similar situation as me. With kids going off to college.
My youngest son's starting at Winona State next week, and yours is heading out to California.
And mine goes to California tomorrow. So empty nester life is about to be here for us.
Well, good for you. I'm sure it'll give you more time to do the restaurants and
more
all the things you like
I know.
To do, right?
What's the best place you've eaten at lately?
Oh, man. I haven't been out for a while. I kind of have my regular spots. I've ran into you in the North Loop a couple years ago.
Each other.
Yeah,
indeed.
You got it.
Paul, appreciate it.
Nice to see you. Chris.
Really good.
Thanks.
Paul Molitor, he is the best. In the booth for the Twins tonight. So make sure you listen in. Paul Molitor. We'll break more live from Target Field. And in just a couple minutes, we're going to talk State Fair. That's coming your way at 4:30 in DeRussia Eats here on Stecia. All right, 4:25. We are live at Target Field. Twins and Tigers. We saw warming up. Couple little nuggets, Dan, as we were looking out before the game, but we saw the sheriff,
our old friend Chris Paddock, out saying hi to a few of his former teammates and doing some warm ups himself. Absolutely,
he is not pitching today.
Not today. Tarek Skubal is pitching for the Tigers today. So, oof.
And then we also saw Pablo.
Pablo was out early Lopez. Doing some long-term throwing and looks to be working his way back, hopefully.
So good stuff.
Sometime, I think, September-ish, maybe they're hoping for him. So we'll see.
Pre-game
at 6 o'clock straight up, and then
six.
First pitch will be 6:40 tonight.
So. Very good. Big news in the television news space today. And a lot of people, a lot of you have been texting asking me about this lawsuit. That was filed by a former Channel 5 meteorologist, Ren Clare. And we've had Ren on the show. She was on the show with us out at the State Fair.
Yes.
She was great.
Yeah.
And her lawsuit brings up really some interesting questions when it comes to the sort of conversation that is allowed legally when you're in a space that is a performance medium. So television, let's be real, in TV, in my years in TV, people talked about my hairline, my weight, my clothing, the colors I'd wear, the ties I'd wear. All of this was always part of conversation, not just from viewers, but also from coworkers and bosses. And there is a line between talking about TV stuff and sexual harassment. Now, I'm a guy, so I guess, can you sexually harass a guy?
Yes, you
sure.
can. Absolutely.
But
it's not nearly as prevalent as
it's not nearly as prevalent.
Right.
From her perspective, Here are some of the allegations. She talks about a bunch of stuff, different range of mistreatment. Some of it she called overtly sexist conduct by coworkers and superiors, sabotage, retaliation after she filed complaints. And she said after she reported the alleged misconduct, she was demoted, fired, and replaced with a less qualified man, which must be a rough one for Chris Reese, the current chief meteorologist over there to hear. So the question is this. If a boss makes comments about your body, if a boss says, will the audience accept a woman as credible and authoritative in a scientist role? Well, that sounds...
that sounds sexist.
That sounds sexist to me. Now, if you say, I think the clothes you're wearing are too baggy, or they're not flattering, or that color doesn't look good on you, to me, that's just TV talk. That's directly related to your job, directly related to your performance. But the question about what exactly makes up sexual harassment, despite the 8 million online training modules that you and I have taken, Dan?
Yes.
I think sometimes it's still questionable. I will say when someone says they're being or they're filing a complaint, that's a pretty good sign to say, like, well, we got to check ourselves.
Right, because, you know...
But you also, like anybody, can file any kind of complaint. What if you're a whiner? You're just a whiner and a complainer and trying to weaponize the system to protect yourself. That, I think that happens, too.
Well, I think in theory, people believe that that happens. I don't know how often it actually happens,
yeah,
which isn't to say fair. That it can't, but right. I think, you know, who really wants to be that person, right? Or who wants to be the person rocking the boat and causing a bunch of problems, right? Most people in general don't want to be that person, and it has to be something egregious before they're finally going to step up and say, I've had enough, I need to file a complaint, because you know the kind of blowback that's coming if you do something like this, which is what inclines me to, in general, again, this is big picture generalities, but to believe that, you know, something serious was going on here. I don't believe that happens very often, that folks are just manipulating the system or trying to get somebody in trouble, or, you know, again, I'm not saying it never happens, I'm not saying it can't happen, but I think you start from a place of, okay, something has to be going on here to cause an issue, which doesn't, I'm not talking about the legalities, I'm talking about internally turning around and saying, okay, you know, what have we done and what can we do better so that we don't put ourselves in a position like this again.
But is it, so if you have a boss, and according to the lawsuit, the boss voiced his preference for tighter fitting outfits, complained when she wore pants instead of a dress, complained about her decision to switch from blonde to her natural hair color. To me, that is TV appropriate discussion.
I don't disagree, but would you also...
Like, you can't say that in the accounting office.
But
you're on TV.
TV's a different animal. Absolutely grant that. But even within that context, there are ways to do it that aren't overtly sexual or aren't overtly discriminatory, as opposed to saying, you know, clothes and hair and makeup and all these things are part of our presentation as a newscast, and we have certain guidelines that we'd like you to follow. There are ways to say that that aren't harassing, and there are ways to say that that are harassing.
Yeah. Yeah, for
and
sure.
We're not in that room.
We don't know. Yeah. We don't know. But I do think, like, it is a difficult profession to walk that line. And I used to, so back when I worked at Channel 4, I had interns at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the conversation would be about, you know, we talk about, like, kind of clothes you need to wear on TV. And there was a point where I stopped having those conversations, because I just didn't feel like there was a way to do it without someone getting either taken it the wrong way or me saying it in a way that was not welcome. And so I was like, well, I'm just not going to talk about that anymore.
And
because it's just
right. And
the
then,
world changed and people were more sensitive. And I don't mean that pejoratively, but people are more sensitive about those things, and so it's like, well,
the radar's up more often.
Like, you're on your own,
right? And
which that kind of stinks too. But like,
it
whatever
does. But I mean, that's you as a colleague, right? Versus somebody that's a
boss.
And you know, that's a totally different factor as well.
It's a good point. Good point. I tend to think that it's often a last step when somebody files a lawsuit.
I agree. Yep.
Yeah, to your point that.
Yep.
Not that it automatically means legally you're right, but it does make me think. You probably hit a point, right?
I do that once in a while, you know, on this show. Like, once, every now and then.
All right, State Fair is 1 week from today.
Uh-huh.
We are going to celebrate the State Fair while we're at it. But one week out, I want to give you a chance to do something else. DeRussia Eats with your most overrated State Fair food. That's when we come back. And DeRussia Eats is brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board. We are literally 1 week away. In 1 week from this moment, 7 days, I will have severe indigestion.
Yes. And maybe heat stroke.
By tradition, for the last, and I was talking to Alyssa about this the other day, I have a tradition of sampling every single new food at the Minnesota State Fair. And I never get through all of it because I always have people with me and we're taking pictures and whatever. And it's difficult to eat 40 new foods.
You're a human being with a limited stomach capacity.
And I sort of do the drinks on another day because I just can't.
Right.
So, and you're trying to walk all over the place. Then we have a show. And we also have to do a show that day. But I will try probably 25 items. And I was telling Alyssa, I'm like, you know, I sort of wish I could get out of that business. Like, what if I didn't have to do that anymore?
Mm.
Because then I could just have my favorites. And that got me thinking about, well, we know what people's favorites are, right? What do you think is overrated? 651-461-9226. I want to hear what you don't like. Because during the fair, I'm not here for the negativity. I don't want to hear it. I don't care if you don't like the fair. You don't have to show me how cool you are and that I'm not like the other people. I don't like the fair. Shut up during the fair. It's let people have their fun.
But like, before the fair.
Well, now I think it would be fun.
Sure.
Let you have your moment. And I was thinking about what is the fair food that everyone loves that I don't love. And I'll tell you what it used to be. It used to be the corn.
Oh, corn's fantastic.
Well,
why were you down on the corn?
It's just freaking corn, man. Like, it's the untights corn that you can get at Kowalski's or Byerly's or the untights stand in the parking lot of my Cub. It's everywhere. It's delicious, and I had corn last night, thanks to my guy Inacio.
Zeke,
who gave me corn from his field in Brooklyn Park.
How about that?
It was delicious.
Of course it was. Why? Because it was fresh. And that's the key to the corn at the State Fair, as we've talked to the folks there before.
Yes, and I didn't know.
Is that it's constantly being refreshed.
Well, I sort of knew, but I was wrong.
Right.
I was wrong.
The other thing that I love about the corn is it's cheap. It's about $4.
Yeah.
Which compared to pretty much everything else at the State Fair is crazy reasonable.
On YouTube, Lethal saying, I missed it. It was the deep fried Oreo, I think. Deep fried Oreo, overrated. Yeah. I tried the deep fried Oreo. That was Jonathan. I don't mean to give credit to the wrong
person.
Oh, don't
do that.
Jonathan said deep fried Oreo. I would say deep fried Oreo, compared to the other deep fried stuff, the Oreo is the best of those deep fried items. Turkey leg. Do you think the turkey leg is overrated?
The trouble with the turkey, it sounds like
a sandwich.
Good idea. Yeah, the turkey leg sounds like a good idea, but like in practicality, it's not very pragmatic.
Bad. Yeah.
It's just, it's unwieldy and it's messy and it's, you know, not great.
I would never buy a turkey leg.
Yeah.
And I also think people think the turkey leg is healthy, but I saw like the calorie count on the turkey leg once, and it's like...
It's up there?
It's like a day's worth of calories.
I don't know.
I mean, know calories don't count at the State Fair.
Well, that's just
but it's
it.
Like,
I mean, if you're going to the State Fair and like, but I want to eat healthy,
But like if you're going to eat it, I want it to be good. Like I'll have one of my favorite is the fresh French fries. You know that.
Sure.
And I can house a good, yep. I can't house a bucket of them.
No, but one of the smaller.
One of the small little
deals.
Cups.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Jonathan loves the deep fried Snickers. Cheese curds is another response we're getting.
I think a lot of people think the cheese curds are slightly overrated. I don't. I don't buy that personally. I mean,
I don't either.
Obviously, again, you know, we should reemphasize the fact that I have the palate of an 8-year-old boy. So it's just the very basic stuff that I like. But it's Prano Pups, and it's the cheese curds, and it's the corn. You know, there's a great – it's kind of a – I shouldn't say this on the air. In the food building, not too terribly far from where the cheese curds are, is a great little mom-and-pop burger joint, like an old diner.
Oh, yes. Place. Yep.
And it's financially very reasonable cost and really good stuff. So that's sort of my go-tos all the time. The fanciest, newest stuff, that's where I...
That's not for you.
That's not for me. So
I'm shocked.
I know. I know you're floored. It's a good thing you were sitting down when I told you that.
Texters. Please let Jason know what I suggest. All right. What I do is go to the fair one time by myself, do what I want to do, eat what I want to eat. That way, when I go with others, I can go with the flow. That's a good idea. Let's go to Dan and Blaine. Dan, overrated. Overrated state fair food. What's yours?
Sweet Martha's. Oh. I can't stand them.
How dare you?
Even when they're fresh and hot out of the oven?
Isn't that funny? It's like I feel like taboo now, you know? Like, oh, my God, I'm going against the norm, but I don't see anything special with those or those donuts that people will stand in line for 2 hours for. I just don't get it.
Now,
you know the one.
Yeah, so I thought you were going to say the mini donuts, because I personally think mini donuts are slightly overrated.
Agreed.
Like, I don't care that much. It's good. I'll have, give me one, that kind of warm.
Yeah.
Now, the donuts, I will agree with you that I wouldn't, certainly not, I wouldn't wait 2 hours, I wouldn't wait 1 hour. But my wife says that donut, that they called it like the Amish donut, I forget the name of the outfit that makes these, it's up by the Eco building. My wife, to this day, says it's the best donut she's ever had in her life.
Mm.
Now,
that's kind of like those crumble cookies, though. Overrated. Overrated.
Crumble. I'm with you. I agree with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Crumble, it's all like there's too much crap on top of that cookie. Like, I don't need I don't need all of that stuff. You know?
You don't need 5 feet of frosting.
No, thank you.
Exactly. Thanks, Dan. I love the show. Thank you so much, Jason.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. So on the topic of Sweet Martha's, a lot of textures are coming in with Sweet Martha's, and the donuts are called Peachy's Donuts.
Okay.
I think those are phenomenal. And it was Andrew Zimmern who first told me about Peachy's Donuts on our show.
He'll be on the show when we get out to the fair, for sure.
I think the Sweet Martha's cookies are phenomenal in their context. So is it? It's a smell and a taste that is the state fair.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we can get snobby on the bit and be like, I make better. One of our texters says I make better cookies at home.
I mean, great. That's not the point.
Yeah. Yes. And there's something to me that is special about the Sweet Martha's in the moment experience, along with the sharing, where if you got a bucket, you're going to offer it to a stranger. And there's something very state fair about that. So that's sort of, I do think there's been enough critical backlash to those cookies that today it's not really going against the grain to say that I think they're overrated.
No, we've all heard that, especially, you know, the bit about, you know, they're great when they're fresh, but when they cool off, they start to get average. That's an interesting point about the community element of the cookie that we could get more into maybe on the other side. But I also wish that, and I understand why she doesn't, but I wish there was like, can I get like a 10 cookie version? Something where it's just not, you know, just this overflowing bucket or cone or whatever they're selling
for
out.
Sure.
Because there's just no way to, even with sharing, and you know how I am with sharing, even with that, it's impossible
it's a
to
lot.
Go through all that stuff.
I know. Lots of texts coming in. We'll get into it when we come back. Overrated thing at the fair. 1 week away, drive time coming back on CCA. Well, lots of texts coming in with people's reaction. Lots of overrated stuff. Corn on the cob, it's always burnt, says Paul. Corn dog, with a lot of hearts. Big fat bacon is no longer big and fat, therefore it's overrated. Poutine, who eats that at the fair? Psychopaths. Dairy building ice cream cones always are the best food at the fair, says the texter.
What do you think is the most shareable food at the state fair? Is it Sweet Martha's? Is it the cheese curds? What's the most community building food you can get?
That is an excellent question.
Thank you.
I think the curds, the sharing of the curds is always the issue. Always the issue. Gopher Dairy Club malts are overrated. All right. I don't know. I most of the new food is overrated.
Tends to be.
Like, I could do without almost all of that stuff.
It's very rare now these days that you come up with something that goes on to be a staple at the fair.
Yes.
There's just sort of a newness and uniqueness to it, and that's great, but it's not something that really stays.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, lots coming up here from Target Field. D-Rush Hour News headlines next.